much. I am most grateful to be amongst you once again. A few days back, I was sitting on a rock on the banks of the river Ganga in the foothills of the Himalayas. Quietly chanting Krishna's holy names. Looking at the most beautiful current of Ganga Mayi as she was rippling and swirling, creating most beautiful art. Every moment of the swishing of her waves was like a masterpiece. And there were unlimited such masterpieces being created at every moment. But as soon as they were created, they disappeared. Like nature, Mother Ganga is always. Current continuously flows. But every manifestation is constantly changing. Nothing is stable. By the powers of time, at every moment, everything is changing. Cannot hold on to anything. But if we can just take shelter of the current of truth rather than the ever-changing appearances, then we can find everlasting happiness. Janmadyasa yataha. Krishna is that eternal truth, the Supreme Lord. The background of everything that exists. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna says, I am the source of all material and all spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly worship me with all their hearts. According to Bhagavad Gita, this is the definition of wisdom. To know how Krishna is the eternal truth. That is the foundation of everything that exists. And he is the all-loving Supreme Person. And to worship him with all our hearts. Seeing the beauty of Mother Ganga, I looked upon the Himalayan mountains. Each tree looked like it was an antenna just emitting divine energy. I looked into the sky, very clear, blue, rich blue summer sky. And high above was a hawk soaring through the airways. With the confidence of an emperor, scanning with his green eyes over the river. His reddish-brown feathers shining in the sun. He hovered lower, lower, and even lower. Soon he was only a few yards above my head. Suddenly, he plunged into the river. And I saw some struggle taking place. And hardly moments later, he emerged from the river with a fish in his talons or claws, flapping and struggling for its dear life. The hawk effortlessly flew into the horizon with the fish. So I was thinking about what I had just seen. How each and every one of us is like that fish. The little fish, he was maybe a foot long. He knew nothing except life in a river. You know, down there below the current of the Ganges, they don't have these travel log television stations that show you all different parts of the world. All he knew was his life in the river. And obviously he was with a school of many dozens of other fish that he was just swimming around with. Since he was born, he was swimming around with his family and friends. It was just like any other day. Completely normal day. Just swimming around under the current of the Ganga. When suddenly the claws of the talons of the hawk just ripped into him and ripped him right out of the only environment he ever knew. Similarly, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was asked by the Yaksha, what is the greatest thing? What is the most inconceivable thing? The most wonderful thing? And Yudhisthira Maharaj said, everyone sees, everyone is going to die, but no one really takes it to heart that it could happen to me at any moment. How many times have we heard of someone driving on the road just like any other day? And the hawk of fate changes his or her entire life. With crisis, tragedy, or death. We're sitting in a class and we get a phone call. Of course, all of you should have your cell phones off. But we have seen it. Phone call. The person we love most in life. Some tragedy or death. We were not expecting it. Some accident. Some disease. How many ways can material nature at any moment just take you right out of your comfortable environment when you least expect it? It happens millions of times. If you take other species of life, It happens billions of times every hour, every day. And we're just swimming along in the current, thinking just like any day. But it is reality. The hawk of fate is right above us with his glistening green eyes just scanning our environment. And at any moment, ready to pounce upon us and rip us out of the environment that we find shelter in. What could be the lesson of this? Perhaps that we should guard very carefully against complacency. Complacency means we think everything is just all right and everything will just go on as I expect it to go on. And we do not really put effort in to what we know we have to do. Procrastination is one of the most sad realities of human nature. We know what, for a devotee, we know what must be done. But somehow or other, we're just coasting in the current of our routine days, our routine weeks, our routine months, our routine years. And do we really, really try to cultivate the consciousness by which we can purely take shelter of the holy names? How to overcome this complacency is to prioritize the purpose of life in our life. Everything is vanishing around us. The only reality is our relationship with God. How are we making that a priority? Many of us know it should be the priority. But in our practical life, all the other fish around us and the current around us, just, yes, trying to go to the next stage. So Srila Prabhupada, when he would sit in our temples on his illustrious Vyasasan, he would plead with us to understand the urgency of putting bhakti first in our life. Bhagavad Gita did not teach the world through Arjuna to neglect our occupational duties, our profession, our families. But Bhagavad Gita teaches us to perform our work with an understanding of the urgency of taking shelter of Krishna through whatever we do. That is the purpose. Bhagavad Gita doesn't just say, do your work. Bhagavad Gita says, do your work with the topmost priority to please Krishna. Otherwise, the Gita says that work done that is not as a sacrifice to Vishnu simply creates bondage in the laws of nature. But the Lord is so kind that while we know the hawk of fate is always hovering above us and all our loved ones and everyone else, he comes to teach us again and again and again of where real shelter is to be found. Tomorrow, we will be celebrating the holy occasion of the appearance of Lord Sri Ramchandra, Ram Nomi. In the morning, they have requested me to give class at Radharas Bihari Temple. And then after the class, the deities of Sita, Ram, Lakshman, and Hanuman that Srila Prabhupada personally arranged and commissioned to be there will have their Abhishekam. And at noon, the time of the appearance of Ram, there will be the auspicious Aarti ceremony. And then to not create conflict between the two temple programs, we will be celebrating Ram Nomi in the evening. Evening is nice because it doesn't create conflict. Also gives more time for everyone to cook offerings, and even those who go to work can attend. There are unlimited messages that Ram has taught us through his transcendental pastimes. Krishna tells in Gita, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yogeti tattvata. Jakva deham punarajanma naiti mam eti sorajuna. That one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never has to take birth in this material world again, but attains my eternal supreme abode. This morning, Govinda Prabhu was explaining in his very nice class that I was secretly listening to every word of. How the Vedas specifically teach us that in order to get the benefit of studying, one must have a guru, a spiritual master. Otherwise, it becomes something like an academic study. Or even if we have spiritual pursuits, with our own mind, we may adopt an interpretation that actually takes us away from the goal rather than closer to the goal. Or may take us closer, but only to a certain point. So Srila Prabhupada, who is coming from Parampara, by his explanation of what he has given us, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can understand so nicely. And Prabhupada told the stories of Ramayana. But even when we read Ramayana, when we read through the eyes and the ears and the heart that Prabhupada has given us, we can understand it as it is. We can actually experience what Ram is trying to tell us. It begins by revealing how no matter what you have, no matter who you are, happiness is not always a reality. Anandamayo Bhyashat, everyone is seeking happiness. People get married for happiness. People have children for happiness. I was recently listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was in 1966 talking about the different types of liberation to a group in New York City. I believe it was 26 Second Avenue. And he said there's five types of liberation. He said four of them are personal. Having the same bodily features of the Lord in the spiritual world, living on the same planet as the Lord, being a constant associate of the Lord. Like that. Having the same opulence as the Lord. Only one, Sayujya, is merging into the existence of the Lord. And he was explaining how a devotee never wants this Sayujya Mukti. But he said, from India, somehow or other, most people think that this is what liberation means. Brahman realization. It's only one of the five. But people think that's what it is. And that's the only one that's rejected, really, by Vaishnavas. So one lady was asking, why do you reject? What's wrong with it? And Prabhupada explained. He said, everyone is looking for happiness. The source of that is Krishna. He is Rasaraj. He is the supreme enjoyer. And Prabhupada explained how Krishna is the father and mother of every living being, aham bija pratapita. And we are all expansions of Krishna, part and parcels of Krishna. It's like the sun has unlimited sun rays that are qualitatively giving off heat and light, but are just tiny fragments of the sun that gives off unlimited all heat and all light. So Prabhupada asked this lady, do you know why God creates unlimited living entities out of himself? Unlimited expansions who are all his eternal servants? She said, no, why? He said, for one reason. For pleasure. The pleasure of love. That's why we're all created. And then Prabhupada explained, why does a husband and wife decide to have children? For one reason. Happiness. Yes? Somehow or other, they think that this child's going to make them happy. Otherwise, why would you have children? You know there's all kinds of troubles and everything else, but still you think it's going to make me happy. Oh, yes. So we have children because we want that loving exchange that will bring pleasure. So God, who is the supreme, he has unlimited children for the purpose of that loving exchange. Now Srila Prabhupada said, what if a son or a daughter comes up to his mother and says, I'm frustrated with life. I'm just disgusted with life. I just don't want to exist anymore. I want to merge into your womb. I don't like this world anymore. I've come from your womb. I want to merge back into your womb. This world is just too frustrating. Will the mother be happy by such a child? She'll be very unhappy. And also, the mother can't allow the child to merge in their womb either. But God is unlimited. So we're emanating from God. He is our mother and father. And he's telling us, your real home is in the spiritual world. With me and with all the devotees eternally. What are you doing here? But we engage in so many materialistic karmic activities. And then we become so frustrated. So we take to a path of spirituality when we say, Mother, I want to merge back in your womb. My Lord, I want to merge into you. And God, Krishna, he says, all right, if that's what you want, come. Brahman realization, come merge into me. But that's not where the real... Then there will be peace. There will be no suffering. Which is blissful compared to materialistic struggle. But the real happiness that the soul is seeking is to go back home, back to Godhead. To the spiritual abode where we can engage in the loving pastimes of the Lord. So the Lord comes to this world to teach so many lessons. But ultimately the culmination of all those lessons, if we hear Ramayana, Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Upanishads, if we hear any of the Vedic literatures from the proper sources, from the highest proper sources, then the conclusion is to love Krishna. Vedaishta serveraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna says, I am the compiler of Vedanta. And by all the Vedas, I am to be known. In fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized, that a devotee is not interested in any of the five types of liberation. Isn't even concerned with having bodily features like the Lord eternally, having the same opulences, living on the same planet, being the constant associate. Devotee is not concerned with any of those. A pure devotee simply wants to serve in any situation according to the Lord's will. Narayana Parayana Sadulabha Prasantatma Kotishwapi Mahamune. The Lord Shiva said about Chitraketu Maharaj, just see Parvati Devi, just see. This is the quality of a pure Vaishnava. Doesn't care anything about him or herself. Is only concerned with serving the Lord and pleasing the Lord. Swarga Bhavarga Narakeshu. Whether the devotee is in heaven or whether the devotee is in hell, it's not his interest. Wherever the Lord wants him to serve, he's grateful, happy, and blissful to serve. That is the highest transcendental plane. The gopis of Vrindavan, if Krishna has a headache, they're willing to put the dust of their feet on his head. And if it means, for that offense, going to hell for millions or billions of years, they don't mind suffering in hell if it will give some pleasure to Krishna. Now, would Krishna allow such a devotee to go to hell? Vasudev Dutt understood that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission was to give love of God to the people of this world. So he prayed to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, let all their karma come on me. I'll go to hell. I'll suffer hellish conditions for any amount of time, but let all of them be with you, happy, liberated. Lord Chaitanya cried. He said, you are Prahlad Maharaj. You are speaking with such compassion. Why would the Lord allow you to go to hell when you're giving everything for him? The Lord will liberate the whole universe just on the basis of your desire. And Krishna told gopis, when they took so many risks going into forest, giving up their social position, causing so much anxiety to their loved ones, they didn't want to do that. They were soft-hearted, loving ladies. But they took such risk of enduring so much pain, humiliation, and disgrace just to give pleasure to Krishna. And Krishna reciprocated. He said, I cannot pay you back with all the wealth of all the material and spiritual worlds. I cannot repay you, even in an entire lifetime of Lord Brahma. Just be happiness with that love that you feel in your own heart. Dasarat was the emperor of the world. His capital was Ayodhya. And Valmiki in his Ramayana explains the unbelievable wealth, opulence, and happiness of Ayodhya. There's nothing like it today. Neither Washington, D.C., or New Delhi, or Lahore, or Moscow. No capital city is like Ayodhya. First of all, everything was clean. For those of you who are proud about Bombay, I think I told you, I saw a survey by some international agency. And of all the cities in the world, Bombay is, what, seven? Number seven, as far as the seventh dirtiest city in the world. And to further crush your pride, Delhi was number 24. And Calcutta is so clean, it wasn't even on the list. It only showed the first, the dirtiest 25 cities. So, everything was beautiful, ivory walls in his palace, ivory furniture was lit with emeralds and diamonds and rubies and jewels, millions and millions of them everywhere. practically like what we use by building with cement. They use diamonds, emeralds, rubies, and sapphires. Beautiful. Everybody is well dressed. There's no poverty. Everybody's happy. Everybody's employed. Everybody has very sattvic work. Everybody's very kind to each other. Everybody has faith in God. The king is just providing everything for his citizens. And because everyone was so pious, Mother Nature was just providing everything in abundance. And he was heroic. He had no challengers of other kings. Everything was so fine. But he looked out his window in complete anxiety. He was the most miserable man. Because despite having all the wealth and the power of an emperor, and a healthy body, and everything was going his way, one thing didn't work. He had no son. Now, as a king, in the solar dynasty, there was Bibiswan, Manu, Ikshvaku. From that time, there was a line of kings who were all sons of the original king. If he didn't have a son that he could coronate as the next king before he retired, then he was completely failing in his most important of all duties. And it was just like a dagger in his heart, causing him so much misery and pain. He approached the Brahmins, he wanted to do yajnas, he was doing so many things. That subject we will discuss tomorrow. But it is a lesson. Whoever you are, whatever you may be, still, that hawk is there to cause you to suffer. And it's very powerful. Unless we take shelter of the Lord. Because Krishna doesn't say that if you surrender to me, then this material world will be a nice place. Krishna says, Abramabhuvanaloka punar avartanorjana mamupetitu kontaya punar janmana vidyate. From the highest planet to the lowest, they're all places where you have to die. They're all places of suffering. Krishna consciousness is not the art of worshiping God so that you could be happy in material life. Krishna consciousness teaches the only real happiness, which means to transcend material life. Even if the hawk grabs you, like the little fish, and takes you out of the water. You can't even breathe. And he's just flying higher and higher. And you know he's going to eat you. Yes? That could happen. Devotee, not devotee. But if you're Krishna conscious, you could be happy, even in that situation. You could be happy. Knowing, so nice, I'm going back to Godhead. and you chant the holy names. Just like Prabhupada gave example of the kitten and the rat. The rat is in the mouth of a cat and sees the cat as death personified. The kitten is in the same mouth and sees the cat as a most loving, protective mother. So even death, even the most difficult situation, for one who has not taken shelter, it's very inconceivable, very painful. But for one who takes shelter, whatever situation, we know it's just going to bring me closer to the Lord if I just remember Him with faith and chant His holy names. So Dasarath Maharaj paid a price. But because he turned to the great sages and he worshipped the Lord, through that anxiety, the Supreme Personality of Godhead became his son. Devaki and Vasudeva also. It wasn't easy. They were in prison. Six of their children were killed. The seventh one appeared to be a miscarriage. The eighth one was Krishna, because they never gave up their faith. But the same night that Krishna was born, Krishna said, "Take me away. Bring me over to Nanda Maharaja's house in Gokul." So they performed such tapasya for so many years and endured so many heartbreaks to get Krishna. And the same night, Krishna left them and didn't come back for about over 10 years. Krishna is so merciful. And for that whole 10 years, they were still captive by Kamsa the whole time. It's very difficult. Similarly, finally, Ram is born on Ram Navami, along with Bharat, Lakshman, Shatrughna. Can you imagine the joy of Dasarath, Kausalya, Sumitra, and Kaikeyi, and everyone in Ayodhya? Just looking at Ramchandra was the ultimate happiness. But then one day Vishwamitra Muni comes. Yes? And Dasarath Maharaj, we'll describe more detail tomorrow. He welcomes Vishwamitra. He says, I am your servant. How can I serve you? Vishwamitra Muni looks at him really grave. He said, "Do you promise? Do you give your word as the king of the Raghu dynasty, that you will give me anything I ask for?" Dasarath Maharaj said, "Of course." "Well, I have come, long walk from the forest, where I'm performing yajna, but my yajna is being destroyed by two rakshasas, Maricha, Subahu." "Give me your eldest son, Ram, to go to the forest to dispatch those rakshasas. And I'll bring him back in about 10 days. Dasarath said, "He's only a boy. He's not even 16 years old. He hasn't even finished his training in fighting. He's never fought. He's never been in a battle his whole life. And Rakshasas aren't humans. Rakshasas are a race that are above the humans in power, in their mysticism. He says, I know how dangerous Rakshasas are. They're so cunning. They're so divisive. They're so powerful. And little Ram fighting Rakshasas, I cannot let him go. Vishwamitra Muni said, you have given your promise. Dasarath Maharaj said, leave Ram in Ayodhya. I will personally lead my entire army to your ashram to fight those Rakshasas. And I promise you, I'm willing to fight the rest of my life in your ashram against those Rakshasas to protect your sacrifice, as long as Ram is happy and safe home. Vishwamitra Muni became very angry. Very angry. And in a stern voice, he chastised Maharaj Dasarath. He said, you think you can help me? These two Rakshasas have been sent by Ravana. It's below his dignity to just be just ruining the sacrifices of sages like me. So he sends his representatives. But he's right behind them, ready to fight. Dasarath Maharaj, when he heard Ravana's name, he said, I have heard news about this Rakshasa. Nobody can stand before him. What can I do? What could all my armies do? He could single-handedly destroy my entire army. The demigods, with all of their armies, cannot defeat him. We're just humans. And what to speak of my little Ram? No, not possible. Vishwamitra Muni said, if you do not give me Ram, then I curse you will bring eternal infamy to your entire dynasty. Hare Krishna. No. Krishna tells in Gita, for a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. There could be no greater curse than this. To die is not a bad curse, because Kshatriyas they're not so much afraid of dying. But to be dishonored, to dishonor your entire dynasty, that is a fate billions of times worse than death for a Kshatriya with integrity. Do you know what Dasarath Maharaj did? He fell to the ground unconscious. Then Vasishtha Muni took him aside and he said, send Ram. Vishwamitra Muni himself can destroy those Rakshasas. I have seen his powers. He used to be a king. He worshipped Lord Shiva and has all the astras of Shiva to use. He's very powerful. But he's not fighting because he already told us that He could kill these demons effortlessly. But because he's performing the yajna, the rule of the yajna is he's not allowed to get angry, or else the whole yajna is spoiled. And to fight them and kill them, he has to get angry. So therefore, he's coming to ask for Ram. But he'll teach Ram all the weapons that he has, and he'll protect him. And besides that, King Dasarath, it's already been told to you that your son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no fear. There's no harm. He will be perfectly safe. Send him with Vishwamitra Muni immediately, because he's really angry. And I know what can happen if he gets angry. So here, Dasarath was still pleading that I only live seeing Ram. If an hour passes, I can't cope with life if I'm not seeing him. How could I possibly tolerate him going away from me? So here we have life. First, he's so miserable because he doesn't have a son. And then he's so blissful because he has a son. And now he's so miserable because of his son. So following the advice of Vasishtha Muni, Dasarath Maharaj, yes, you please take my Ram. And please bring him back soon. And take Lakshman also. Because Lakshman cannot live a moment without Ram. And Ram cannot live a moment without Lakshman. So Dasarath Maharaj went to the forest. I mean, he suffered immense separation. As well as Kausalya, Kaikeyi, everyone, Sumitra, the whole dynasty. Everyone in Ayodhya was just weeping and crying that Ram is leaving, going to the forest with Vishwamitra Muni to fight Rakshasas. No matter how much philosophy that he's the Supreme Lord and Vishwamitra will protect him and everything else, still, to Kausalya and Dasarath, he was their son. And they loved him as a parent for a child. Think about it, parents. Your child's 15 years old, and he's sent into the jungles to fight Rakshasas. Multiply your anxiety by 1 billion times, and you have Dasarath Maharaj and Mother Kausalya. Because they love their children billions of times more than we can ever love our children, because he's the Supreme Lord, the ultimate object of everyone's love. We love our children because they're an infinitesimal part of Krishna. Can you imagine if your child is Krishna? What kind of love that invokes? So, it seemed like a really, really difficult, horrible thing that happened to Dasarath and Kausalya. But Ram went, and he dispatched Maricha by shooting him with an arrow and sending him into the ocean 800 miles away. Then after that, they went on a tour with Vishwamitra Muni. Ram and Lakshman, they collected wood for him, made fires for him to keep him warm, collected water for him, went and collected herbs to serve him and fruits, massaged his feet, asked him so many questions about different histories of the Ganges and histories about different great dynasties. And like the most perfect disciples, Ram and Lakshman served their guru. And then Vishwamitra Muni brings him to Mithila. And with his blessings, breaks the bow of Shiva and is to be married to Sita. We'll describe more detail tomorrow. Actually, today's class is an advertisement for tomorrow. So then Janak Maharaj, the father of Sita, is overwhelmed that Ram will be the husband of my daughter. The greatest kings, demons, demigods, they all came down to get Sita, but nobody could lift that bow. But when Sita saw Ram, and Ram saw Sita, their original divine love awakened. Absolute silence when he approached that bow. Everyone in the whole Mithila was praying, let him raise the bow. All he was supposed to do was lift it and string it. Just put the string on it. That's all he was supposed to do. But for years, not a single warrior, prince, or king could even lift that bow, could even move it. Even Ravana came. He couldn't do it. It took 300 gigantic men to move the bow into the assembly. Hare Krishna. And here's little Ram, whose arms are like soft like lotus petals, but very strong. First he touched the feet of his guru, Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni gave his blessings. And Ram circumambulated the bow out of respect for Lord Shiva and looked at it, put his hand around it. Total silence. Sita's heart was thumping. Please, please, please. Janak Maharaj, he was just like overwhelmed. Because Sita saw every other person that ever came, because she had to be there with the garland for everybody that came. All these big, big Kshatriyas were coming, and she had to stand there with the garland. She was just praying, I hope he doesn't do it. Because she saw every single one of them were all arrogant. They were all puffed up that they were so strong, that they had conquered countries, they had conquered planets, they were so famous, they had so much wealth. She just had no attraction for all these arrogant kings, princes. But Ram, he was just the embodiment of humility, graciousness, respect to his elders. All the others, they would come and say, I'm going to lift that thing. Give me the bow. Bring the bow. I will do it. Sita was just... he couldn't do it. And finally, when thousands of the most powerful men on the planets couldn't lift the bow, they were so angry because their pride was so crushed that they all came together to declare war against Janak. They all together attacked his city because they felt humiliated. And he fought one full year against them. And finally, he ran out of all of his weapons, and he ran out of his treasury. Everything in his kingdom was going to fight against these people. That's how much he was protecting his daughter. All he had to do was say to one of them, "All right, you know, here, don't worry about the bow, you know." He just loved his daughter. He decided, "My daughter must marry Vishnu, and only I'll make a rule that only Vishnu could fulfill to lift this bow of Shiva." He had to pray to the demigods to help him fight this battle against all the kings. So for the first time, Janak Maharaj was just praying and hoping, let Ram string this bow. But how is it possible? The bow is so heavy and so hard. It was beautiful. It was made out of ivory and gold and silver and precious jewels and bells. Ram, unlike everyone else, he didn't brag. He just touched the feet of his guru and offered all respects and permission from Janak Maharaj. He put his hand on it. Everyone was watching. And suddenly he lifted it above his head. There was cheers from all directions. But can he put the string on it? Then he put one end on the ground. He took the string on one end, had to bend the bow to string the other end. The string. Everyone was motionless. They couldn't believe what they had just seen. And he did it as effortlessly as one would lift up and bend a piece of sugar cane. But then the Lord wanted to please Sita even more. So now that the string was on, that's all he had to do. He already won. He pulled the string back so far. The bow broke. With such a tumultuous sound, it was like an earthquake. Everyone fell unconscious. Except Janak, Sita, Vishwamitra, Muni, Lakshman, and Ram. Everyone else there was unconscious. And when they came to consciousness, they saw what the Lord had done. It was beautiful. The demigods showered flowers. Everyone in Mithila was dancing and singing and crying. And then Sita was so sweet that she just waited for her father's instruction. Father instructed her. And she came with the garland. She looked at Ram's feet. And somehow she just slightly glanced toward his eyes, and he glanced at her eyes, and then she looked down again. But that moment of glance just absolutely filled both of their hearts with unlimited ecstatic love for each other. And Sita placed that golden garland around the neck of Ramchandra. And the whole of Mithila went into an ecstatic celebration. King Janak sent his chief ministers to Ayodhya to give the news to Dasarath Maharaj. They really went fast. It took them only 3 days. When they arrived, they explained everything Ram had done. And now Dasarath Maharaj was invited to Mithila for the marriage. Dasarath Maharaj, he heard all about Sita. And Maharaj Janak was the person he, of all the kings in all the world, he honored and loved him as his best friend. It was the ultimate fulfillment of his desire that Ram, he told his people, he said, I was just discussing with you about how we should arrange for Ram's marriage. But who? And just at that point, Vishwamitra Muni came and took him away. And what appeared to be the most devastating thing in Dasarath's life was the cause of the happiest moment. Yes? He was praying, begging, suffering that Ram was going to be taken away. But because he was taken away, everything changed. Now he's going to marry Sita. So we should never... we should never see things simply by how they appear. One day when I was sitting on that rock on the bank of the Ganges, I was looking at the waves and I was thinking, what do I see? And what's really there? Below those waves are whole civilizations of fishes. Yes? Millions and millions of fishes swimming all around and all sorts of wonderful, wonderful underwater vegetation. And rocks. But what do we see? We can only see the surface. But there's so much beneath the surface. Just like you look at the sea, all you see is the surface. Every now and then you may see a fish jump and go, doop. And you say, and your little daughter says, look, mommy, a fish. Did you see that fish? There's billions of fish down there. You just happen to see one because it came to the surface. So life is like that. We can't just think that the surface of what we see, what appears, is all in all. Because God may have a plan. And for devotees, God always has a plan if we simply cooperate. Whether it's success or failure, honor or dishonor, pleasure or pain, or even a tragedy, or even something that's just the fulfillment of our desires. Don't be content just reacting to what's appearing before you. Try to understand that there is some deep reasons for everything that happens in this world. We may not understand it now. But a devotee looks for an opportunity to come closer to God in every situation. Yes, when things appear at its worst, that Ram is being taken away from us, it may be just an arrangement to get Sita as your daughter-in-law. Does that make sense? As an analogy. Srila Prabhupada was actually a very, very successful businessman in the pharmaceutical works in Allahabad. And then he lost everything. Everything. He was always a great devotee, serving his guru's mission and so many things, but he lost everything. Things were stolen from him, he was cheated, this and that, and everything else. Now, for most people who that happens to, they either commit suicide or they just become really depressed and hate the world, or they want to get revenge or whatever. But Srila Prabhupada remembered the words of the Shastra. Yasyaham anagrinami harishyeta dhanam shanai. When the Lord shows His special mercy to His devotee, He may just take everything away. So that devotee has no one else to turn to except Krishna. So this must be happening, Prabhupada, to bring me closer to fulfilling my Guru Maharaj's desire. Yes? So he lost everything. And he ended up going to Jhansi and later on to Vrindavan with nothing. With nothing at all. But a few years later, he comes back from America to Bombay, sometime later. And he was telling some businessmen who came, industrialists and businessmen from Bombay who came to meet him. Prabhupada said, I left this country on a cargo ship with 40 rupees, and I've come back, and I'm running a society that's making no less than 20 lakhs every day. And this was in the 1970s. And we have temples, 100 temples, and millions of books. He took no credit for it. When everything was taken away from him, he saw it was Krishna. But Krishna took everything away from him to give him something billions of times greater. The opportunity to fulfill the desire of his Guru Maharaj. Now he may not have been thinking, he may not have known it. He may or may not have known the exact details of what's going to work out when everything was taken. But he had faith that Krishna has a plan. And when he was on the Jaladuta, and he was getting a series of heart attacks, with no doctors, and no hospitals, nothing. He was just alone, just sitting there, just suffering heart attacks and seasickness on top of the heart attack. Who would have known at that time that those heart attacks would glorify him to millions of people and endear them to his heart, to their hearts? Who would have known that those heart attacks would have generations and generations of people glorifying what a great soul he was for undergoing such difficult just to give them Krishna's love? Yes, when we think about Prabhupada, that situation on Jaladuta really does endear us to his heart. I mean, endear him to our hearts. He went through all that out of compassion for us. No other reason. He had nothing else to gain except to give us love of God. When it was happening, it appeared terrible. But Krishna transformed it into one of the greatest historical pastimes of Vaishnava history. And why does Krishna do these things in his own leelas and in the leelas of his devotees? To teach us. And whatever situation may come, is when you take to Krishna consciousness, don't think that that means your whole material life is going to be prosperous and nice and happy and everyone's going to like you and your business is going to be good. It might. It might become like that. But not for long. Because it's under material energy. Mahatmanastu mamparata daivim prakriti mashata bhajantyanam yamanasho gyatva bhutadem abhyayam. Krishna says, who is a Mahatma? One who goes beyond the three modes of material nature. One who's under the divine energy. And how does he do that? By always serving me, by always worshipping me, by always remembering me. And Lord Chaitanya said, the easiest way to do that, Kirtaniya Sadahari.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
So, when we become devotee, we learn to see the opportunity to take shelter and access the empowerment and the love of Krishna in every situation in life. That's the beauty. If things go well, wonderful. If things don't go well on the material platform, wonderful. Sometimes when things go well, it's just leading you into a trap. And sometimes when things go well, it's leading you back to Godhead, if you just have the right consciousness. And when things are not going well, it may be leading you back to Godhead. It's just a matter of our consciousness. To remember Krishna in a favorable way and reciprocate by remaining faithful. So Dasarath Maharaj, it was the happiest thing that could possibly be. The union of the dynasties of Janak and Dasarath. Ram is married. And by Vishwamitra Muni, who's this really renounced sadhu, he gives an instruction to Janak and Dasarath. While we're here having this marriage, you should, Janak, marry your other daughter to, and your brother's daughters to Bharat and Lakshman and Satrughna. We could have a four-way marriage, all at once. Now that's the way it was done. That's the way it was done in those days. That's the way it was done in those days. It's hard for sannyasis to explain these things properly. Vishwamitra Muni told him to do it. Immediately, they were blissful. Yes, yes, very good, very good. They were all married. So now Dasarath Maharaj is the happiest man. And Kaikeyi, Kaushalya, Sumitra, they're very happy ladies. But how long did that happiness last? Mandara. But we'll tell that story tomorrow. Kaikeyi was such a nice lady. She loved Ram. But just due to bad association, she became so envious. And banished Ram to the forest for 14 years. And Sita left. and Lakshman left. Unbelievable. The whole city of Ayodhya was devastated. Nobody could understand anything except that this is just horrible, a fate worse than death for everyone. But the plan of the Lord was, this was what was required in order to get Ravana and his dynasty. And even for Sitaram Lakshman, when they were living in Chitrakoot, they were really happy. Even Sita and Ram were discussing at the Kamagiri, saying, this is nicer than Ayodhya. So nice, nice, beautiful trees and mountains, Mandakini Gangas flowing, and pure-hearted sages. We can sit and hear their katas and serve them fruits and roots and berries. And just in this beautiful natural scene, most wonderful place in the world. Sita was so happy. But how long did that last? They were happy because they were together. Ravana stole Sita to enjoy for his own personal purposes. Hanuman, he was willing to give his life, his soul, his everything to return Sita to Ram. That is the difference between the divine and the demoniac nature. You have heard the story of the two dogs? Please raise your hand if you have heard the story of the two dogs. Within everyone's heart, the good dog and the bad dog. Well, from the point of view of Ramayana, there's the Ravana and there's the Hanuman. Ravana is willing to risk everything to take Sita, the property of God, to enjoy for himself. And Hanuman's willing to risk everything to give his life and soul to have the joy of seeing Sita with Ram. That is the difference between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. Ravana wanted to enjoy for himself. Hanuman wanted to see Ram enjoy. And we all have both of those forces within us. So everyone in India who are Hindus, everyone likes Hanuman. Yes? He's very popular. Any holy place you go, Hanumanji is very prominent. Whether it's Vrindavan or Ayodhya or Rameshwaram or Jagannath Puri or Badrinath, anywhere, Hanuman's there. Have anyone ever gone to a holy place and not see Hanuman? Yes. Children love the stories of Hanuman. I've seen so many of our little children, of our devotees, when they're small, you go to their home and they have little Hanuman clubs. They're running around beating everyone else in the family. Boys do that. Sometimes girls too. Yes, Hanuman's very popular. But actually, Hanuman's a very serious subject. He may be popular, but what is he trying to teach you? And how much are we following? Today, even Ravanas like Hanuman, as long as they don't
understand what Hanuman's actually doing. Yes? We're just thinking it in terms of we're worshiping Hanuman, praying, let me enjoy Sita. She's the goddess of fortune. All material energy, everything is the fortune representing Sita. It's all meant for the service of the Lord. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Krishna says, offer me a leaf, flower, root, or water with love and devotion, I will accept it. Everything in creation is meant to be offered to God with love and devotion. That was Hanuman. But Ravana wants to take those things and enjoy it himself. It's mine. It's mine. It's mine. So we shouldn't worship Hanuman asking him, give this to me to be mine. But that's what many people do. Hanuman performed his wonderful lila by the arrangement of Lord to show the world what real devotion is. We cannot imitate him. Very difficult. Jumping across oceans. Flying in the air with mountains. Very difficult. But in our own little way, whoever we are, we can follow in his footsteps by just dedicating our energy and our heart to pleasing the Lord, serving the Lord, doing the will of the Lord. Maybe we'll discuss that tomorrow. These wonderful occasions are wonderful opportunities to meditate on what our priorities should be in our life and how to live our life through all the circumstances that may come in such a way that we come closer to our goal, which is prema bhakti, love for Krishna. And that is possible if we have a good foundation that we build our life upon. If we're sincerely chanting the holy names every day, we're chanting our 16 rounds every day, or if we haven't come to that point, regularly chanting, sincerely, attentively each day, we're hearing katas, we're studying Srila Prabhupada's books, we're associating with devotees who bring out the divine qualities that are within us, who give us strength. Those simple activities is foundational, so that whatever happens, we have the right consciousness to see below the surface and see the opportunity to grow. But if we do not have good sadhana and we do not have good association, we will not have the intelligence. God will not give us the intelligence to make the right choices, either in what appears to be the good or the difficult things that may come upon us. We may be successful and make the right choice. There may be a crisis and we make the right or wrong choice. It's not important. What's important is we make the right choice. And for that we need this strong foundation. And that takes prioritizing the association of saintly people whenever possible. Every day, nourishing our heart by hearing the glories of the Lord and chanting the holy names of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. At this time we shall perform Nam Sankirtan.